Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning, a chilly Saturday morning in the Northeast. But as I always say, we will live vicariously by watching some Gulfstream today, highlighted by the Holy Bull. Nice step on the Derby Trail down in Florida. They do so on the West Coast as well in the Bob Lewis. And I thought, who better to talk a little three-year-old Derby Trail steps and maybe some other stakes action as well than to reach out to our friend Ellis Starr, the National Racing Analyst at Equibase. I knew we'd be taking a look at a couple of these nice three-year-old races today. Ellis, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Good morning, racing fan.
Happy to have you on board. As I say, talk some baby steps on the Derby Trail early in the year, both the Holy Bull and the Bob Lewis, and we'll hit on a couple other Gulfstream stakes as well. But before we do that, talked a little bit about it on the handicapping show just earlier with our colleague Brian Addo, but I'm curious, a couple of nights ago, the Eclipse Awards were held. Any surprises for you? I think most of the categories were slam dunks, and as I said earlier, there were three categories that as a voter I wasn't sure about. I was going to be interested to see the two turf categories and the sprint category. I went with Vekoma in the sprint, but I wasn't shocked at all about Whitmore. But any surprises or interest for you on the Eclipse side?
No, not really. I have to go pull out my ballot and see. I kept meaning to check and see. You always want to check and see how you do versus the consensus, but I haven't done that yet. Now, nothing of any surprise. I think everything made pretty much sense. I mean, you had to give credit to the horses later in the year. Swiss Skydiver course and everything made sense. There's always going to be some grumbling about some of some of the horses that really performed well early that maybe didn't get their due, but it is what it is.
Yeah, in a funny year. But as I say, going into the event, most of those were kind of slammed up. One other thing I wanted to touch on with you, I'm just curious, are you at all a future pool player? And last week, the Future Pool 2, which was the first of 2021. Future Pool 1 was at the end of last year. And I was on the air on Sunday afternoon kind of looking at the odds just before I went off the air. And at that point, All Others was 8-5. And I said, if All Others clicks down to 7-5, I'm not that interested. But if it went up a little bit, and it subsequently did, All Others closed at 9-5. And I thought, you know what, for taking a shot in January at anybody but these 23 and potentially tripling your money, I thought All Others was pretty good. On the single side, Mandaloon at a big price, Proxy at a big price, those were a little bit interesting. But are you a future player? Did you see anything interesting last week?
I used to play the books 1 and 2 quite a lot. And it was always fun. It's always a challenge to try and pick a horse that you think is going to make it to the end even more than catch the bet. 9-5 certainly is great value on All Others at this point. I'll probably take a look later. You know, as always, I don't think they can fix anything. The problem is when you have the races that weekend and you'd like to get odds on Friday before races run on Saturday of some of the horses that might run well or that you might think might improve the race after that weekend. But unfortunately, because it is parimutuel, you get the odds when the bets close. So it's one of the reasons I've kind of stayed away a little bit, but it's always intriguing, and certainly I would agree. 9-5, I think, is good value. You know, at least you can't crush it, because if you crushed it, you know, you'd end up getting 7-5. But, you know, for $100, it's not a bad thing to have something going into the race and say that. I'd rather pick a horse and bet $10 on it. You know, with 2031, Mandaloon's a good example. Horses that could really mature between now and April and May.
Yeah, it's always kind of fun and interesting. And if you can get a little price on that All Others, you may wind up with 8 or 9 in the gate that offer you a little bit of value to maybe play around on Derby Day itself. All right, let's jump in, though, and talk a little bit about this afternoon and the action down at Gulfstream. And again, a little bit later on, we'll talk a little Santa Anita as well. And let's kind of work our way back at Gulfstream and start with the highlight of the day, the Holy Bull. That's your race of the week on Equibase. If folks want to check that out, they can go over to equibase.com and look for that featured race of the week link. Holy Bull, I'm going to take a little pop with a mount in here. The other Todd Pletcher, just because Todd Pletcher, these early Derby prep races and Gulfstream, you throw that in. The two Pletchers look interesting to me in here, and I thought, I'll take a shot with the longer priced half. But I know Greatest Honor is of interest to you, so I pulled up the maiden special victory from December 26th. Greatest Honor is going to be the number 7 horse as we look at this replay. Goes out for Shug McGahee with a win in career start number 4 here and over the Gulfstream Strip and at the distance. So Greatest Honor comes in with a lot of things in his favor. Talk about your thoughts in the Holy Bull.
Well, first of the Pletchers, you know, I had a hard time kind of leaving him off my top list, especially looking at some of my stats, race line statistics, like Pletcher 33% sprinter route second time starters. I mean, it's just really good. And 7 for 16 the last, I think it was 2 years, last out maiden special winners in that category. I mean, almost 50%. Not as good going into stakes, but still real good. I really had to go with the experience, and I'm not, you know me, my motto is friends don't let friends bet chalk. So, you know, Greatest Honor is the favorite. He was 1-2 in a maiden race. He's 5-2 here. It might be that price. I just think the two-turn experience is really, really important. The fact that Shug stretched him out from 7-9 furlongs as a maiden, and he battled head-and-head the last 8th and got ahead, basically beaten ahead in November, and then that win at Gulfstream, and on every figure maker, but particularly the Echo Base figure, that 104 just sticks out. And I always assume this time of year, as well as I do with two-year-olds late in the year, that they're all going to improve about the same rate. If that's the case, even some of the horses that have run okay, 87s, 89s, like Prime Factor, they're not going to get to that level. All Greatest Honor has to do is repeat the race, and if Ortiz just stays on, I don't think there's a problem. So it's not that great from a betting perspective, but I think it's a good play, and of course he's a Tappet. Sitting on Go was a horse I'm curious about. 5-1's a little low, but I could use him in exotics. He was really good. I mean, he broke his maiden first out last summer, then won the Iroquois in a one-turn mile. Then he bombed in the juvenile, and he made a middle move in the Kentucky Jockey Club, but he's really matured. And I would not put it past Romans to have him ready. If not this time, then next time. It's very possible. So he's a horse I'm intrigued. I might bet a couple bucks to win. I will say that, you know, Brody's Cause is a first crop sire, basically, was last year's, his first 3-year-olds. And he's already had a couple good horses. A Smiley Sabatka, who ran second in the Kentucky Jockey Club, is a Brody's Cause, as was Calypso, who ran second in the Los Alamitos Starlet in California. So Sitting on Go. Papa 2 is my price horse. He's the one I'm going to be keying with Greatest Honor in second and third in exotics. Maybe a couple bucks to win. I don't think he should be 15-1, Seth. The horse just won, or actually ran second in the Mucho Macho Man at a mile. It was a decent 9-horse field to Mutis Beck, if I'm saying that right, who's a sideline right now with a minor injury. Before that, second behind Jackie's, I mean, way beaten, but Jackie's Warrior. Before that, 2 wins. He's a dialed in. He costs $80,000. He's worth a play. So a win place bet on the 3 Papa 2. Big win bet for me on Greatest Honor. And then some exotics is how I'm playing the race.
All right. Sounds good. Let's go a race earlier. Look at the 3-year-old fillies going a mile on the grass in the Swedish Chant. And be interested to get your thoughts, because I talked about this on the handicapping show, the stakes recap, the stakes preview earlier. We looked at this race, and when I first looked at the race and the PPs, I was going to tilt towards Honey Pants, beaten favorite last time at 3-2, and had some trouble according to the trouble line. And we pulled up the replay, and I'll pull the replay again. We don't have the head on this time. Showed it on the stakes replay, stakes preview, but you'll see Honey Pants does have a little trouble, a little bumping. But I didn't know whether it was enough to move the horse up. So I tilted towards Con Lima to repeat this afternoon. Con Lima is the number 6 in here on the lead. Honey Pants is the number 3. And you can see the 3 and the 7 are kind of bumping there a little bit. It was a little more apparent on the head-on. But again, I didn't think it was enough for me to switch things up. On the page, on the paper, I thought so. On the replay, I didn't. But that's one of the ones that I think is going to be up to everybody to kind of take a look at and decide for themselves. You might be in a different camp than I am, but I went Con Lima over Honey Pants. I'm not going to look for them to switch things up this afternoon. How did you see it?
Well, this is interesting. You know, Carl Lima, in my opinion, is a need-to-lead type. Now, yeah, three-year-olds can change their styles, but when I look at those running lines, wire-to-wire, almost wire-to-wire, got second by to Simply Ravishing back in the summer at Saratoga, and then second around the track. That's a horse that's a need-to-lead type that runs second around. And then two wire-to-wire wins. And then I look at Lioness of Brittany stretching out off five furlong turf races. I just, in my opinion, there's no way Con Lima gets the lead she wants. And whether she can rate, sure, she's fast enough. She's on a good pattern. But I took a stand against her completely. And I could, and I'm not arguing with your stand at all because it's a legitimate stand on form. I took a stand on pace. Honey Pants can improve off the effort because Con Lima doesn't get an easy lead this time. And my top pick to do that even more so is White Frost for Belmont. I like the fact that he stretched her out to two turns on grass, third career start, and she closed with maturity from fourth to win by a length and change. And then off this two-month layoff, he's bringing her back in a stake. I mean, when Mott's confident, I like it. I think it's really important. And I think even though the figures are kind of low, the candy ride of a curling mare, I'll take the 9-2 all day. Back to pace, Lioness of Brittany, as I said, can outrun Con Lima early, and I think she'll be around. Anchor Down doesn't have a lot of two-turn horses. This is a Florida bred, but can get two turns. He's by Tappet, and the mare is a Broken Vow mare. I think this is a tricky horse at 10-1. I'm not leaving Lioness of Brittany off. And then Honey Pants, as I said, will improve, and I'm going to take a stand against Con Lima. So my play in the race is White Frost is a win bet. Lions of Brittany is going to be a smaller win bet. And then I'm going to play Honey Pants, White Frost, and Lions of Brittany over the field in an exacta and maybe a trifecta, hoping that Con Lima, being kind of out of her game, ends up off the board. That's how you make money here.
Now I'm interested to see how this race works out because the handicappers report, I said, we talked about this on the stakes preview. I talked with Mike Callahan, our colleague, but just an hour ago on the handicappers report with Brian Addo. He was handicapping Gulfstream. He was right where you are. He has Con Lima out, and I think on the pace scenario, and he put White Frost on top. So now I'm interested to see how this race plays out, certainly. All right, let's go on to race number 9, the Forward Gal. Three-year-old filly's going 7 furlongs, and we may be in the same boat here. And again, we talked about this on the handicappers report earlier, too. I'm not sure we're going to get the 8-1, but I like competitive speed with coming out of the Glitter Woman. We're going to watch that race. Competitive speed is the number 3 horse here. Nice win over the track, a stakes win and career start number 4. Again, the morning line. And when I looked at the morning line and talked about this on the stakes preview, I said, maybe a little bit of value. The more I looked as we were talking during the handicapping show an hour ago, I thought, you know what, I think the Pletcher horse may take some action as a gel, but I think competitive speed is going to take some action as well. So that 8-1 may be a little bit generous, but I have competitive speed on top. Your thoughts in the Forward Gal?
Andy Sterling tweeted out last night he thought it was a misprint, the 8-1. So I think, unfortunately, you're right. There's going to be a lot of steam on competitive speed. I mean, she's won 3 in a row. She's on an improving pattern of figures. The 6.5 to 7 is not a problem. Reyes gets along with her well. She costs $5,000 at auctions. She's going to be over $100,000 even if she comes in second here. She's very tough. I think it's a 2-horse race. Zagiel at 7-5 is just tough to bet as a win bet. But you can play pick 3s. I think there's some good value in the sequence here, 9, 10, 11 pick 3s. I got it on one of my blogs for people to follow me on Twitter. And I think as far as the betting goes, you know, I was going to play an exact at 3-7 overall. That's probably a dumb bet, I think. I'm just going to bet competitive speed to win if I get about 3-1 or more. And then most of my plays involving this race will be starting pick 3s and doubles using the 3 and the 7. I just can't see any further than that. Zagiel should take a big step forward. There's no doubt. And again, back to Pletcher, 30% second race out, last out winners, last 5 years, 27 for 89. It's just a big number. His horses are very well meant when they win first out and come back to win again.
I will say on the handy, actually it was the stakes preview, Mike Callahan mentioned Queen Arella, and as he was talking also a little bit about the last two workouts. At 20-1 and off a little bit of a two-year-old to a three-year-old layoff, and that morning line I think may hold up. I may play around with Queen Arella a little bit. I didn't have it in the mix, but as I looked, I thought, you know what, those workouts may be tipping their hand a little bit as at least a player in some spot.
Well, this is where you play a horse in second and third and tries, isn't it? For example, for a cheap ticket, you could play 3-7 over 4 all and 3-7 over all 4. If you like those two and get her in second and third, you could turn, you know, $8 into 60 or 80.
I like that. I'm putting that on my paper here to do when I'm sitting in here doing the handicapping show this afternoon. I like that idea. 3-7 over 4 all, 3-7 over all 4. I like it.
I'm great at giving out betting strategy, even though I don't do it myself.
I'll give you a commission. All right, let's move on to the other Coast three-year-old action. As mentioned earlier, the Bob Lewis today, Spielberg in for Bob Baffert. Bob Baffert also with Medina Spirit. Field of 8 is scheduled to go. But I was looking, and for folks who want to find Ellis's thoughts in printed form, you can go to the Santa Anita website, and Ellis's selections are available there as well for selected races out at Santa Anita. But I was reading your thoughts on this race. I'm going to be intrigued to hear what you have to say, because I know Parnelli, who is going to be a price, is in your mix. And because of that, I went two races back for Parnelli to watch the Maiden Breaker at Del Mar at the end of November. Parnelli will be the number 7 horse in here at a short price, gets it done pretty nicely. Again, in the fourth career start, after 3 straight second place finishes, breaks through here, and then came back last time and ran 3rd in the Sham behind Life is Good. But you like him this afternoon. He's 12-1 on the morning line, and I think Parnelli will offer some value. Talk a little bit about your thoughts in the Bob Lewis.
Well, similar to we talked about the forward yell with competitive speed, 12-1 looks like a misprint. If Parnelli had not run 3rd in the Sham, beaten 13, he wouldn't be 12-1, because his 3 races before that, as you said, was the 5 3/4 length maiden win at a mile, and then he battles the entire length of the stretch, the last 8, head and head with Spielberg, and he was 3-2 that day to Spielberg's 4-5, and then he battles head and head at a mile the entire last 8 with Hot Rod Charlie. He's 2-5 that day, and Hot Rod Charlie's 3-1. So here's a horse that the public, and he proved it, thought that he was as good as these other two, who are at 3-1 and 7-2 today, and he's a 12-1 off that last race. Well, the jockey changed to Rispoli, I should say, who is right now breathing down Hernandez's neck, who's riding great for the early lead in the jockey's race. It's really a 2-horse race. Pratt's a 3rd. Is tremendous. I mean, no knock on Van Dyke, but Rispoli's just hot. He's 19-61. He's just winning a 3rd of his races, and it's dirt and turf. And certainly this call you wrote out of Bernardine, Dumaire, just screams. So the key to profit is Parnelli. I like him as well. Medina Spirit, that was the best race in the field last time out in the Sham. It was a 110. He was getting the Life is Good, arguably. Some people want to say Life is Good, you know, was just geared down. That's fine. But Medina Spirit's only a 3rd start. Sprint route, great pattern, rail. I can't knock it. He's 5-2. He's not playable as a win bet. Wipe the slate, the 7 for Doug O'Neill's 4-1. Again, you're not getting a lot of value here. I wish this was a 12-horse field. But another horse, sprint route. He was 2nd to Life is Good in his debut, which no disgrace. And then he won by 3. He's on an up pattern. I'm going to mess around with these. Parnelli's the key is on the Santa Anita free selection for the website. I like Parnelli. I'm going to box him top and bottom, key him top and bottom, and exactas with Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie, Wipe the Slate, and Spielberg, and that's where I'm going to try and make my money. But you can go lots of ways here. I just hope Parnelli stays about 8-1 because his odds are well aligned with his probability to win, in my opinion.
Yeah, with a couple of Bafferts in there, just a Baffert name in races like this is going to take a lot of money. I think Parnelli will hold some value. But, yeah, talking about Rispoli, 31%. How often do you see a jockey on a major circuit at 30% or over? I've mentioned this a couple of times over the past couple of months. I think a lot of people in our area, certainly here in upstate New York, concentrate more on East Coast tracks. And this guy may float under the radar a little bit, but certainly if you watch the West Coast, been talking about him for maybe a year or so. And I'm kind of hoping that as this pandemic ends and maybe he gets a couple of big horses where he can move around the country, he'll break out and become far, far more popular amongst all of the racing community.
Yeah, and he wasn't a nobody. He didn't apprentice here. He came over from Italy, I remember, and he was really good. And he got a shot, and I can't remember who had him initially. It may have been Anderson. And he just took by storm. And Hernandez, who moved his tack down from Northern California. I mean, Rosario moved his tack to Santa Anita. So you've got Frat Rosario, Rispoli, and Hernandez. They're all doing well. Cedillo's right behind them. It's a good colony. Yeah. I mean, you got five strong jocks, and Mike Smith, when he does ride, you know, he rides maybe one race and, you know, one or two races on the card. He's certainly still as good as them. And for Rispoli to be doing as well as he's doing, and not just on turf, it just speaks to his talent.
Yeah, like I say, everybody's going to catch on sooner rather than later. Ellis, as always, we appreciate the conversation. And again, you can catch Ellis with the featured race of the week every week on Equibase and at multiple spots on the internet. Follow him at UberCapper on Twitter, and he'll point you in different directions as well. But again, appreciate the conversation. We will certainly talk again as we proceed along the Derby Trail.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, and everybody have a great day. Make some money.
Appreciate it. Ellis Starr, National Racing Analyst for Equibase. That'll lead us into our break. When we come back, we'll do a little news and notes and then wrap up a little bit early because it's an early post time today at Gulfstream. So we'll wind it up a little early and send it to their pregame as well. But we'll have one more segment, so stay tuned. Be back right after this.
Find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on a chilly Saturday morning in the Northeast. I said earlier, if you weren't tuned into the Handicappers Report, I got in my car this morning, the dashboard showing a minus degrees. That's not good. But again, we will continue to live vicariously looking at some of the other tracks. Brian Addo down in Orleans said they're expecting about 70 today, and I'm sure much warmer at the two Florida tracks, which we'll have on the network this afternoon. I am, in fact, watching the signal at Gulfstream, so I'll wrap it up to get you their pregame show, as, again, they have the early post time today on the big card, highlighted by the Holy Bull, but things will kick off this morning at Gulfstream at 11:45. That means the pregame show. Right now they're showing, I think, the backstretch with some palm trees, and it's just a static shot. But again, I got my eye up there, so we'll get you to Gulfstream for their pregame shortly. Before we do that, mentioned it already a couple times this morning, but Thursday evening you could watch online, but you could also watch right here on the network. We showed it, the Eclipse Awards. I was intrigued to see how they were going to pull it off with a virtual Eclipse Awards. And as I said earlier, I think everything was pre-taped, including the acceptance speeches. So they must have put a lid on it after, you know, okay, we're going to record your speech, but keep it on the down low. And it they pulled it off. It was fine. It was, as I said, a little flat. And I will say some of the acceptance speeches were also a little robotic, given that people clearly had a chance now to formulate a speech as opposed to, okay, you're all in a room, here you win, walk up and make your speech. The spontaneous speeches seemed to have a little more life. There were a couple that, as I say, were a little bit on the robotic side. But they, again, given the situation, they did a good job. And that the upshot being obviously to announce the winners, and that all went pretty much according to plan. A horse of the year. And we have some graphics here. And once again, I will remind folks, voters, Eclipse voters have to vote, here's my top pick, here's my second pick, here's my third pick. But the Eclipse Awards themselves are only based on the top picks. And so you see here, these are the top pick voting totals. And it's only the top three, just for space consideration. Some categories had multiple. I'm just looking, the owner category, one, two, three, four. Which one of the categories? A few of the categories. You know, it can have as many as get votes, as get top votes. But as I say, I limited this graphic to just the top three for size consideration. But you get an idea there. You know, Horse of the Year, you can see Authentic, 224. Monomoy Girl got 7 votes. Swiss Skydiver got 6 votes. So there was a little consideration given in other directions, and you can go down there. And why they do that, voters vote for top pick, second pick, third pick, but only, excuse me, the top pick is considered. Why they do that? You can see right there on the page, the three-year-old category is why. Only 2 horses got votes. So you wouldn't be able to have 3 finalists there. The 1, 2, 3 voting totals for finalists makes sense in that area. But again, it's a little bit funny as far as then looking at the actual voting and whatnot. But it just, for logistic purposes, it makes sense. But as I say, for the Eclipse Awards themselves, only voters' top votes are counted. Similar situation, in fact, in the three-year-old filly category, with only Swiss Skydiver and Gamine getting votes. But there, as you see, Authentic, Horse of the Year, Essential Quality, the two-year-old Vequist, the two-year-old filly, Authentic, the three-year-old male, Swiss Skydiver, a three-year-old filly, and Improbable, the dirt male. Nothing surprising there. Improbable, a clear-cut older dirt male over Nixco. You can see a wide margin there, 218 to 8, Vekoma getting 5. Moving on to the next page and continuing on with older dirt female, no surprise, Monomoy Girl. I said earlier, I voted for Vekoma as the top sprinter, and I'm just going to see if I can pull up my sprinter PPs here quickly. But I'm not surprised that Whitmore got it. Whitmore certainly deserved consideration. And for me, when I was voting, it was between those two. And Vekoma, only 3 starts. A win in the Sir Shackleton early in the year at Gulfstream, but then had 2 grade ones, the Carter and the Met Mile. 2 pretty classic mile, or 7 furlong and mile races. And a mile, the one turn mile at Belmont, to me, you're still in that sprint category. So Vekoma, with the 3 starts, maybe not enough. That Met Mile win on July 4th maybe ended the season a little early. I went in that direction. Whitmore, however, gets the win with the Breeders' Cup sprint on his resume. And you know, given the vote totals, it was fairly close, 132 to 83. Close in that as compared to some of these other categories, which are, you know, kind of blowouts. You can see that at least there was some consideration there for Vekoma. But with the Breeders' Cup win, it did turn out to be Whitmore. Gamine in the female sprint category, no shock there with her season. Channelmaker and Rushing Fall, I wasn't quite sure how those two categories were going to turn out, but those two were no surprise. They were the directions I went. Steeplechase horse was, there was not a lot to go with because of the abbreviated steeplechase season this year, but Moscato, no shock there. The human categories are always a little bit up for grabs, and we talked a little bit earlier on the handicapper's report, the trainer category, maybe a little bit of a surprise with the season Bob Baffert had, but given the controversy around Baffert last year, I think a lot of people maybe shied away. And Brad Cox with the big Breeders' Cup weekend, really no shock there. So on the trainer side of thing, Brad Cox 106, Baffert 69, Steve Asmussen 44. Jockey Irad Ortiz 162, Joel Rosario 54. John Velasquez, who had a very good year. Velasquez, I'm glad he got some votes in there because he did have a very good year, but Irad Ortiz put together a spectacular year. And I know a lot of people just on the body of work Rosario did went in his direction. No arguments there as well. Breeder and owner, those are just interesting categories in that it's often hard to make real comparisons, particularly on the owner side of things these days with partnerships where stats are not necessarily parsed out in the way you would hope. But again, no arguments there. The breeders and the owners and winners and the other ones getting votes all had seasons worth tipping your cap to. Alexander Crispin winds up the apprentice jockey. And there was somebody tweeted out, and I'm just looking at my totals here to see what the actual... I'm always amazed the categories where there are abstentions. One of those is steeplechase horse. 32 people abstained from voting in the steeplechase. And I kind of feel like, come on, we can all look at the PPs and kind of, you can pull up on the steeplechase website, you can pull up replays, and come on, it's not that much of a different scenario to make a vote for the steeplechase horse. But there's also some abstentions on the apprentice jockey side of things, and I have my vote. 28 people abstained from the apprentice jockey. And again, you can kind of look up stats and see, you know, go to Equibase and get some information on each of them. And come on, voters, pull the trigger a little bit. Be bold. Don't abstain. Make some decisions in there. But there were your Eclipse of Winners from Thursday night. And again, very little as far as being surprising. It was kind of most of the categories were slam dunks going in. No surprises coming out really on Thursday night. So congratulations to all the 2020 winners. All right, it looks like they are getting underway at Gulfstream. They're in kind of a pre, as they are showing patriotic things, I am anticipating they're playing the anthem. So that means they're about around the corner to kick things off at Gulfstream. So I'll wind things up. Pete Iola will probably hop on with the scratches and changes, so we'll get you to those, the pregame, for a nice card at Gulfstream today. So again, thanks to our friends at Gulfstream, in fact, for their sponsorship of this and some of the other programming on the network. Hopefully we gave you some ideas for Gulfstream this afternoon. I will be back in taking you through Gulfstream live on OTB Live and plenty more. Tampa and Aqueduct and Oaklawn and Fairgrounds, plenty of great action this afternoon. Again, hopefully we gave you some good ideas this morning. Handicapper support, Racing Across America, and a little bit earlier, the stakes preview. I'm going to wrap it up. We'll go to the pregame show at Gulfstream Park. We'll be back in just about an hour and a half or so, a little less than that, about an hour or so, with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.
Top of the morning to you, everybody.